This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Okay, real talk. When did paying someone back become social media?
What do you mean?
Like, say I want to see what you're doing and who you're hanging with, and you're not posting about it on your story. I can just stalk your pay app and find out what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. You do that?
No, I don't do that. I use Apple Cash. It's built into your iPhone, easy and secure. You can send and receive money right in messages and keep it between friends, and then use that money to buy something at a store with Apple Pay.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Maybe. Shh. Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Molly.
And I'm Kristen.
Kristen, it's summer. It's yes. Vacation time.
The high today is in the 90s, Molly.
Yeah, it's
in the 90s.
It's summer, and I know that you are headed off for the beach.
Yes, I am. To
shortly.
Boya La Playa tomorrow.
But the thing I also know about you, thanks to doing this podcast, mm-hmm. is the number one piece of advice you got from your mother, always wear sunscreen.
Oh, yeah. My mom is a huge proponent of sunscreen use.
So I gotta say, you know, maybe you're not going to talk to your mom today before your beach trip. And I just want to say, your mom is going to tell you, your mom, if I may speak for her, says wear sunscreen when you are at the beach this weekend. Are you going to do this?
I'm going to wear sunscreen, yes. Otherwise, I will burn to a crisp. I have red undertones, and I, instead of browning easily, I redden really quickly. So I don't want to sunburn.
Right.
But I got a few days on the beach. And I'm not going to lie, okay? I want it to come back a little bit darker. I would like a summer tan.
You would like a tan?
Yeah.
Well, today, Kristen, we are going to talk about why you might want this tan. Because if I may pretend to be a dermatologist for a moment.
Yeah, I like all this role play that's going on.
I know. First I'm Kristen's mom, now I'm a dermatologist. If I were a dermatologist, I would tell you there's no such thing as just a summer tan, a healthy tan. That is a contradiction in terms. Once your skin changes color, you're damaging your skin, you're at risk for skin cancer, melanoma, a whole host of things. This is not going to be a surprise to anyone. How many times have we heard, wear your sunscreen or face the consequences? And yet still you, Kristen.
I know.
As I know you to be a very intelligent, logical woman, you want the tan. And I think you're alone in that. So that's what we're going to look at. Why do we want these tans? Why do we continue to tan even if we know it's bad for us? Basically, we want to put a lot of nuggets in your head that might just ruin your summer vacation.
Exactly. Or just make it a little shadier. I think it's pretty well known that being pale used to be in vogue.
Yes.
Before the Industrial Revolution, because it was a sign of wealth.
Yes.
If you were pale, that meant that you were living a life of leisure indoors instead of toiling out in the fields. But then with the Industrial Revolution, everything moves indoors, away from the sun. So
the workers are in these dank factories.
Yeah, and so the wealthy people go outside.
And it starts to be featured in fashion magazines, mm-hmm. In health journals. But let's talk about one favorite fun fact about the pale rich before we move on, Kristen.
Yes, because this goes back for a long, 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 long time.
Yeah, this is very much a 20th century development that the tan is fashionable and a sign of health. Because what we've got before those workers moved back inside and the rich started going outside mm-hmm. for leisure activities was rich women, to ensure that paleness would be their defining feature, used to paint their skin with these lead-based and toxic paints so that they would stay really white. And so I think it's kind of funny that now tanning, we hear it's so dangerous, but even the alternative, being really pale, was dangerous for these women because they would take these really toxic paints and shocks and paint their faces really, really white. And then favorite detail of that is they would take blue, little blue paints and paint blue lines to be their veins to demonstrate their blue blood.
Right. The phrase blue blood comes from Spanish and it refers to the translucent porcelain skin of a Castilian princess. I want everyone listening to this to please tell someone that fact. That is my favorite fact.
When you're lying on the beach, Kristen, wearing not your sunscreen, you can throw that out.
Yes.
All right. So we've talked about how that's, you know, the pale skin's in fashion. Then when the workers are inside and the people can go outside, that's when the fashion starts to shift. And at the same time, scientists and doctors are making major advances in the world of health and sun's role in health.
Yeah, there's always been this notion that the sun is good for you in some way. Even going back to Hippocrates, there people identified some benefits of being out in the sunlight. And not surprisingly, it feels great to be in the sun. It warms you up. It may or may not release endorphins, which we'll get to later. But one man you've probably heard of before, Mr. John Harvey Kellogg of Cornflake fame, actually invented sort of an antique sunbed in 1891.
Yeah.
We start fake baking in 1891, all right, because he thinks that it would cure gout and certain skin conditions, including eczema.
And he's a pretty good marketer. Obviously, we've heard his name. So he sends them off to like Buckingham Palace and Windsor Castle so that the British royals get really in on the act. And then just a few years later, we have probably the sun's biggest year ever.
Yeah, 1903. The year of the sun.
The year of the sun. And not because we had like the sun king on a throne or anything else. That was just a big year for the sun.
Yeah, this is a year that the phrase a healthy tan really comes into popular vernacular. And it is also the year that the world's first dedicated sun clinic is open in the Swiss Alps by Dr. Auguste Rollier, who also wrote the book Heliotherapy about his sun, the sun's healing properties, in which he describes how patients should really just dip their toes gradually into sun baths.
Yeah, you wouldn't go to the clinic and just automatically get a deck chair.
Yeah.
Like, you went there, and you would go there if you had, like, tuberculosis, external tuberculosis particularly, or skin lesions. You would go out there, and first you would have, like, 2 weeks just in a room, in a bed. Yeah. No windows. Then maybe you might get a window room. And then, eventually, they'd open the door outside, and you'd see it. I mean, it took weeks of acclimating to this place before you were allowed to take a full sun bath. But then he published this book that sort of showed before and after pictures of before they show up and they are really pale and they don't look very good. And then, you know, they've got the tan, and whether they got better or not, they looked better with the tan. So people were like, of course, this cures all ailments. This is the way to go. Let us all take sun baths.
Well, it probably also helped that also in 1903, the year of the sun, the Danish physician Niels Finsen is awarded the Nobel Prize for using artificial sunlight to cure tuberculosis of the skin.
So we've got a Nobel Prize. We've got sun clinics. There were, we found an excerpt from old parenting books of the time that said to put, as soon as your kid was like a month old, have them take all their naps outside so they could be in the sun, and like first put them on one side and then roll them over. It sounded like those girls who set timers so that they get evenly baked. That's how they were talking about tanning babies. So it's the year of the sun. Everyone wants to get in the sun. There are only a few small voices around the same time who are saying, have you ever noticed that people who work outside all the time have some pretty gnarly skin lesions?
Have you noticed the seaman's neck?
Yeah, that they specifically picked out sailors, and they picked out the grape pickers of Bordeaux, who spent all day long picking grapes to make wine. They were like, those grape pickers, they might be sick from the sun.
They got some bad skin.
But those people were the minority. Right now, all the pages full of newspapers and magazines are like, sun, 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 sun.
And then Miss Coco Chanel goes on a Riviera vacation in 1923 on the Duke of Westminster's yacht, which really, this kind of sounds like what I'm going to venture off and do tomorrow. And she comes back to Paris with a tan.
Yeah. An accidental tan. She did not mean to get, it's not like laying out the way people say, I'm going to go lay out in the sun was a thing you did. But that's what she did. And accidentally she came back all colorful. And people were like, whoa,
Coco.
If Coco can do it, that's pretty fashionable.
And all of a sudden, tanning becomes the rage. And Style.com noted that the first tanned face appeared in British Vogue 4 years later. And they link it
to... That's 1927.
Yeah. And so they link all of that back to her Coco Chanel's Riviera vacation and accidental tan.
So in the early parts of the 1900s, let's review, we've got the health, we've got the fashion.
Yes.
How else are you going to fight it? I mean, that is what you do is you get a tan and people start having more money to go to the beach and take vacations. Like I said, thinness is in. So you're doing a lot of outdoor activity, exercising, playing tennis, all these leisure sports that are outside. So you're getting sun that way. Makeup starts to help us be tan. Like, for example, when they did Cleopatra in 1963, they had all these bronzers and brown tinted powders that they could make up Elizabeth Taylor with, so she looked like she was from Egypt. So, you know, it really helped us make tanning the thing to do. I mean, I can remember my mother and aunt talking about going tanning when they when they were younger. And sunless tanning happens in 1978 when we've got the modern day sunbed.
Right.
So we have just got invention after, you know, innovation helping us tan. And it's not until the 80s, late 70s and 80s that we start to hear this doesn't seem to be so good long term.
Yeah, this all kind of happens in quick succession. In 1979, we have the invention of the modern day sunbed by a German scientist named Friedrich Wolf, who is called the quote-unquote father of indoor tanning. I just thought that was a funny title. Who knew that indoor tanning had a father?
So maybe he's the father and Coco Chanel's the mother of outdoor tanning?
Yes, and their babies are
brown,
carcinomic skin cells, squamous carcinoma, and cancer. So, and the funny thing is, though, this guy wasn't setting out to help people just get tanner for fashion reasons. He stumbled on the invention of the tanning bed while testing the effects of UV light on athletes because he thought that it might somehow make them perform better. And you know what he found?
They don't necessarily perform better.
Yeah, they don't
do
anything.
They sure look better.
But they look great on the field. But then... only a few years later in the 80s, the FDA developed its first regulations on SPF rating, and in 1986, SPF is officially born.
And, you know, I think from then on out, I mean, that's essentially, you know, we've been alive for that much time, Kristen, and I, you know, I can't remember a time when anyone thought getting sunburned was good.
Right.
I mean, not only did it hurt, but you would, you know, instantly hear, oh man, you're going to get cancer.
Right.
But we know this.
Yeah.
And, you know, the grape pickers in Bordeaux knew it really early on. So why do we still do it? That's a little, I mean, we can't answer this question definitively. Mm-hmm. We'll ask all of our listeners, as always, to help us try and figure out why people do this. But why would you still want a tan when you know it's bad for you? Do we still have this sort of, you know, history in the back of our mind that a tan equals healthy? That seems to be what a lot of people think, that they look better and it's better to look better now than to be sick later. I mean, maybe it's you can't... you can't evaluate the consequences when cancer is a long-term thing and looking really great in a prom dress or a formal dress is a near-term thing. That might be one reason.
Yes. And I do plan to wear my old prom dress to work when I come back, Dan.
But think of, I mean, have you ever been in the vicinity of a tanning salon near prom?
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
I'm not going to lie, Molly. In high school, I distinctly remember my senior year popping by the tanning bed.
Kristen, what did your mother say about
that? It was weird. Me and a couple of my girlfriends went through a strange tanning bed phase, which seems very uncharacteristic. And today, just to give you an idea of how much, especially teen girls, love tanning beds, Time magazine estimates that 2.3 million visit tanning salons at least once a year, and indoor tanning is a $5 billion a year industry.
And there are questions of whether we need to restrict it. Obviously, mm-hmm. there's been a lot of questions in certain states about whether you can ban it, especially for younger people. But sometimes if you need parental permission mm-hmm. on those bans, the parents will sign off on it. So, you know, the public health people are just like, we don't know how to stop something that people enjoy.
Right.
Yet can be so dangerous for them.
Yeah. And just to give you an idea, too, of the very real health consequences, the incidence of melanoma, which is the most lethal form of skin cancer, has doubled in the U.S. among women ages 15 to 29. And that's the prime tanning salon demo right there, you know, and all of a sudden out of nowhere since 1975, the skin cancer rate has doubled.
You know what I found really interesting is the Body Project, which is at Bradley University mm-hmm. in Illinois, which talks a lot about ways in which girls and women alter their bodies to fit certain beauty ideals, mm-hmm. listed tanning on their list of body modification things. I mean, put it right up there with something like foot binding, put it up there with, you know, cosmetic surgery, all these things we think of as really extreme. They're saying tanning is right up there with it in terms of things we do to fit in or to look our best. And, you know, I'm a pale person, so I err on the side of the sun is going to kill me.
Right.
But that's very much the opposite, again, of how they sold tanning to the masses way back when.
Yeah, it does seem like, you know, such a pleasant pastime that happens in the summer. You just lay out, you get a suntan, and you look fabulous. But the World Health Organization in 2009 actually placed tanning beds, kind of to go along with what you said about the Body Project, placed tanning beds on its list of the most cancer-causing substances alongside arsenic, asbestos, and mustard gas.
Mustard gas.
Mustard gas.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, we did a little bit of reading about the psychology of people who tan
right.
when we were getting ready for this. And, you know, they do survey after survey where people say, I know the risk. I want to do it anyway mm-hmm. because it makes me feel good. It makes me look good. I feel healthier when I'm tan. And that leads a lot of people to say maybe there's such a thing as a tanning addiction.
Tanorexia,
as it's
been termed.
And I want to point out that HowStuffWorks.com has an article on this phenomenon, Can You Get Addicted to Tanning? That you can check out if you want to get in-depth on this issue. But they're saying, I mean, like, it's the same thing with cigarettes. We know mm-hmm. cigarettes are bad, but some people still smoke them. We know tanning is bad. We still go to tanning beds. And when they've questioned these adults, they have very real symptoms of withdrawal. And they're jonesing for their next tan.
Yeah, and they think that it might be this idea of tanorexia. And I also would like to note that Time magazine also used the made-up word bronzitude. I'm talking about women who enjoy tanning. But they think that this tanning addiction might be linked to body dysmorphic disorder because a lot of the women, and it's largely focused on women, exhibit low self-esteem, body distortion, and may also have undiagnosed depression and anxiety issues.
And that makes sense. I mean, I haven't read enough to say yes or no on this, but it makes sense that if you're feeling bad about your body, this mm-hmm. is a quick way to fix it.
Yeah.
A lot of people think they look skinnier when they're tan. Mm-hmm. You know, your skin, it looks, you know, can clear up acne for some people.
Yeah.
So I can see how this is a really easy fix. And if you are depressed about your body, this is a quick way to solve it. But, you know, then we just have to deal with a short-term fix versus a long-term consequence.
And one thing that might drive this addiction, and some people have said, this is not an addiction. This is like the media kind of making something up, and this is a scare piece. But some researchers also think that UV exposure might promote endorphin release. So if you're getting that endorphin release when you go to the tanning bed, it could very well kick off an addictive pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Because your body likes that. It wants more of it. You go through withdrawal if you don't get it. So you gotta go back and bake some more.
But think about those people who say they have seasonal affective disorder when the sun doesn't shine.
Yes.
I mean, it cycles back around to where, you do need some level of sun to maintain mental health, which is not exactly the same argument that they were making in 1903. But, you know, they got us out in the sun on a health argument.
Mm-hmm.
And people have, you know, figured out that you can't just live your entire life indoors. You'll get seasonal affective disorder, maybe. So it's finding that balance.
Right.
And I think that's really interesting that In some ways, health will get us outside, but it's not getting us back inside as maybe as quickly as we need to be inside.
Yeah, I mean, and there's nothing wrong. None of these doctors are saying, like, the outdoors is bad for you. There's also a dermatologist who was quoted in Time magazine saying that we're hardwired to look at color as a sign of health and attractiveness and potential good partner to mate with. So she traces it back to
all the way.
Evolution. Yeah.
So she doesn't know about those ladies who are painting their faces white.
Well, I mean, we kind of talked about this too, like with lip color and things like that. Why do we put on rouge? It's a sign of health and youth and vigor, vim and vigor.
And if you have money, the blue line is a sign of that.
I'm going to start rocking that.
Let's start painting our faces with blue lines.
Do I look rich yet, Molly? But the one tanning theory that blew my mind even more so than the origin of blue blood. Death. Tannings link to death.
Ooh.
And I'm not talking about skin cancer. I'm talking about in your brain. Perhaps tanning is the way that we grapple with our own mortality.
Yeah, this is one. I'll be interested to see if anyone has any thoughts on this one. This is from a Psychology Today blog called Death, Love, Sex, Magic by Clay Routledge. And he's saying, he brings up that mustard gas thing. The World Health Organization has made an equivalent out of a tanning bed and mustard gas. So we know that tanning beds are these instruments of death.
Yes.
Yet we still go in them. And it's somehow going into a tanning bed, we subdue the death. Because we come out with this beautiful tan, which again is only beautiful because of, you know, Vogue and things like that. And that is a way for us to psychologically deal with our impending death.
Yeah. It's all based off this thing called threat management theory. And it's this, psychological framework that explores how we maybe use different dangerous, high risk, activities such as smoking or obsessively tanning, that we know are bad for us, but it's a way of just like challenging death, essentially, of saying,
laughing in the face of it.
I'll do this anyway.
Yeah.
Death. So take that, death.
So Kristen, after talking about this for 15 to 20 minutes and knowing that when you go to the beach, you have the opportunity to laugh in the face of death by not reapplying your sunscreen, every so often.
I wear sunscreen. I'm not going to not wear sunscreen.
No, I know. But, you know, if you can, there's a difference between being diligent about reapplying or maybe just, you know, letting it go a little longer. I mean, they were talking about kids who, when tanning became really fashionable, would put motor oil on themselves to like improve their tan. I'm not saying you're going to put motor oil on yourself and literally cook yourself.
I typically use Crisco myself.
But when you are lying on that beach, are you going to be laughing in the face of death? Are you going to be managing your threats?
I'm going to be managing a margarita and
pondering everything you just learned in this episode.
Molly, I'll do this for you. I will take care of my skin. I will reapply when I should.
Okay.
I'm not going to not be able to wear sunscreen now because I'm going to have a little Molly on my shoulder in a dermatologist.
That's my third role.
The Molly on my shoulder.
You know, put me on your one shoulder and your mom on the other. And with our forces combined.
Oh, my God. I'm never going to leave the house.
You will never, ever get any sun. Get just enough to be healthy.
Just enough. So we hope that you have enjoyed this Tanning History podcast. We should also note that we plan to follow up with a skin lightening episode, because if you go over to the other side of the world in India, Vietnam, other South Asian countries, they're not looking for a tan. They want to lighten their skin. That's the Vogue.
So we'll get different, different in different cultures, as most things are. So we welcome your thoughts on tanning. How can we stop it when it's dangerous, but yet people want to do it? Do you do it? What do you think? Etc.
Mm-hmm.
We can have this conversation via email, momstuff@howstuffworks.com, or have the conversation on Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, let's read an email.
All right.
This is one on an old podcast, but a good podcast that I liked, about cord blood.
Oh, yes.
And it's from our listener, Amy, who writes, I wanted to let you know that you missed an option about cord blood banking, and that is donation for research. A friend of mine has Huntington's disease, so when I was pregnant with my first child, I did some research online and found out that the University of South Florida was doing research on Huntington's with stem cells. I contacted them via email, and they put me in touch with the right people to donate my baby's cord blood. The kit was free, as was the shipping. All I had to do was get my doctor's signature on the application and bring the collection kit to the hospital. The collection didn't work out for my first child, but I was successfully able to donate my second and third children's cord blood. It makes me proud that my kids started helping others on the very day they were born, and I hope that somehow our donation has helped the research that is being conducted at the University of South Florida. So very cool.
I've got an email here from Anna, and this is in response to our episode on flight attendants. And she taught English in Japan, and the company she worked for also offered a course called Cabin Attendant English, because cabin attendant is what they refer to as flight attendants. But she writes that only the male teachers were permitted to teach these classes so that the flight attendants could get accustomed to speaking with foreign men. However, some former flight attendants chose to take our regular classes, which is how I got to meet them. These women are all beautiful and quite sharp, but many expressed that they became cabin attendants because they didn't want to get married right away and because they wanted some independence. In every case, they seemed wistful about their sky-high adventures, and most of them admitted that they were only taking English classes because they missed speaking with new people. And she notes in Japan, the majority of the women still quit their jobs upon marrying and give up most of their independence instead of focusing on homemaking and raising children. In many ways, the guidelines for early female flight attendants in the U.S. holds true for Japanese cabin attendants. They must fit physical requirements, can only be of a certain age, and marriage and children are barriers to continuing their careers. A lot of women only last about 5 years in the job. However, it is something young girls aspire to because it allows them to maintain an independent lifestyle for longer before marrying, and the money is good. So thank you for that insight on flight attendants in Japan from Anna, and thank you to all of you who have written in and shared many fascinating facts and stories with us. Again, our email is momstuff@howstuffworks.com, and you can always hit us up on Facebook. We'd love you to like us over there and follow us on Twitter @momstuffpodcast. And lastly, you can go to our blog during the week. It's Stuff Mom Never Told You from howstuffworks.com. Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.